All right, well, I will start off by asking you your full name.
It's Betty, B-E-T-T-E, Lou, and the maiden name was Maxwell, and the married name is Tolbert.
And when, and you don't have to answer when if you don't want to, but when and where were you born?
I was born in St. Joseph, actually out on 22nd Street in a house that my grandparents had built there across from where Green Hills used to be on 22nd Street.
Mm-hmm. Do you know when and kind of how your family came to be in St. Joseph?
Well, the Maxwells, the three Maxwell brothers and their sister, Margaretha Mansfield, came from Paducah, down close to Paducah, Kentucky, actually Fredonia, and they settled out in Maxwell Heights. They all had land grants, and they settled out there, and each one had the 40 acres. And so that's, we're descended from them.
Okay, so you were born in St. Joe. Where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up actually in South St. Joseph. Mm-hmm. Lived on East Colorado Street. And then later, when I was a senior in high school, we moved over on Hammond Street. And then while we lived there, that's when I married my husband, Bob. And then later, he was with the Federal Aviation Agency, and we traveled over 12 states here. And then we later bought land, and then he drew the house plans, and we built our home here then. And we've lived here since June of 1964.
So you pretty much lived in the south part of St. Joe?
Yes, I have.
Uh-huh. Whole life. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What were some of your earliest childhood memories of this area in St. Joseph?
Well, you know, at that time, you stayed close to your own neighborhood. I didn't very often come down to the area that we call the Valley, which is up here at Alabama and King Hill. I lived on East Colorado, so we referred to that as the Avenue, and every little neighborhood was self-contained. You had several grocery stores. There was Hummers and Pedapiers and Charlie Osborg. And so, yes, then down on the Avenue then was Tyson's, had a store down there. And then there was a basket store, but I don't remember ever going to that store. But, you know, there was furniture stores, and you didn't have to go very far from home till you could get everything that you needed.
Can you tell me a little bit about your parents?
Yes, mother was did not work outside the home. She was, and that was the usual thing when I was a child growing up. Mothers were home. In fact, I wasn't real fond of PTA because that was the only thing that kept my mother from being at the door when I got home from school if she was at a PTA meeting. So she was a wonderful seamstress and a very, very good cook. And so then my father worked at the stockyards for 35 years, and then later worked for Redstone Lumber Company, and then Jim Walters, that owns Redstone, then was building homes, and my father then helped with building homes too. So
it's been, I should have asked you, what were your parents' names?
That was Leroy Maxwell, and then my mother was Eva Linder Maxwell. Mm-hmm.
And the lumber company, where was the lumber company that your father worked at?
Redstone first was out there east of where the car business is now. It was on that, over on, I believe it was 40th over there. And they were there, and then later moved down on the junction down here on there at the corner of Lake Avenue in Illinois.
Do you remember your grandparents at all?
Oh my, yes. Uh-huh. In fact, I didn't lose my grandmother. One, I lost both grandmothers, maternal and paternal both, in the summer of 72, and before my first grandchild was born. And my grandfather died when I was maternal grandfather died when I was about 14. Yes, spent a lot of time, grandma and grandpa's. And then my father's mother had remarried after her husband died there at the end of the First World War. So I, of course, naturally did not know him. But
Do you remember hearing your grandparents describe their lives at all?
Oh, yes, quite a bit. Of course, Grandma and Grandpa always, Linder, always had some kind of acreage, not a lot, but some kind of acreage, and had chickens, and Grandpa would get a cow, and they were going to fatten it out, and they were going to fatten out a hog, too, but then he made the mistake of naming them, and then, you know, if you make a pet out of them, you don't butcher. So that's what happened. So then they would sell the animal finally and then buy their own meat. The two grandmothers both made quilts. And Grandma Linder, whatever material she had, whether it was seersucker, whether it was cotton, whether what it was, she just pieced the quilt to pieces together. It didn't have to all. But then Grandma Maxwell, I'll refer to her as Maxwell, but anyway, that Grandma Maxwell, when she pieced the quilts, they're beautiful works of art. Just, and tiny, tiny little stitches and all hand quilted and so on. And I have a beautiful quilt that she gave Bob and me when we were married. And it's in patterns, and I sometimes wonder about maybe shall I. It's each has a definite block, and I have four grandchildren. I thought, well, shall I go ahead and cut that quilt up and have it mounted in a frame and give each one of them so they'll have a part of that? Because, I was married in 47, so it's been a long time. And but I still don't have the nerve to cut that quilt up, but I probably will. Mm-hmm. I do have one child.
Okay.
Only one child, and she and Kenny had four children then, and they lived over in the... I was told, tease the grandchildren, told him it's a foreign country across the river called Kansas. And he is. But, and then I have eight great grandchildren and two great great grandchildren. So, and I'm the quilts that I'm starting on now are the quilts for the great and great great grandchildren. So I've made them all baby quilts, but I want to have a full size quilt so that they can have. So that's what I'm starting on now. So this is the second one because I just started them just this year, and so it should start a little faster. But a year ago, at Christmas time, I gave each one of the daughter and the grandchildren then, and gave each one of them a quilt. And then I'd made baby quilts. Of course, we had some babies that year too. Made 9 quilts that year. But I have 10 finished before this year's over. So. Okay, well, let's see. I'll tell you a little bit about living there on East Colorado Street when you came down to the bottom of the hill. And, of course, I could run up and down the hill then. It was easy. But it was so pretty at Christmas time. They were decorated there at the intersections. There would be decorations. There would be lights strung from corner to corner, you know. And at that time, you didn't have toy stores either. In the windows would be the wagons and the dolls and things like that, and games. And so Peoples and Southside were both furniture stores there at the corner of Missouri and King Hill. And I always wondered why in the world Southside Furniture Store was on the north side of the northeast corner of the block, and Peoples was on the southeast side. If it was going to be Southside, it should have been on the other corner. But there were two drugstores there at that time, Turner's and Nelson's Drugstore. And it was just something you just took for granted. And there was a dime store there. And then the spot was a restaurant that people, traded at. And then Guy Witz's Hardware was at the end of the block. You didn't have to go very far from home at all to get what you needed. So, and then down in the valley, which, as I said, I didn't come down very often, but at each business... they had a Christmas tree with lights on it, and the daughter and I, when she was very young, we were walking to my aunt's house, and there it was snowing, and the snow on those Christmas trees is a picture that I will always have in my mind. I'll never forget about that. So it was really beautiful. So here are just some of the pleasant memories that we have. And of course, there were doctors down here. We had several doctors in South St. Joseph and dentists. And so you, for the most part, you could get all your health needs taken care of, too. Dr. Grant, who was later was in other office, another area of town, but he had an office here in South St. Joseph. So it was we were almost self-supporting. So, but I did go to McKinley School, and I can remember the first day of school. I was so excited, you could start in the middle of the year at that time. My birthday was in January, and so I got to start. I couldn't start in fall. You had to wait until you were six. And so I was so excited about going to school. And when I got over there, you looked up those steps. It just looked like there were 1,000 steps going up. And then there were three or four more concrete steps when you got up to the top, and the double doors going inside, and the beautiful, beautiful floors. You saw that immediately on those wooden steps to get up to the first level. And then to your left, there was this doorway that where you would go down to the basement. But of course, went on up. And then to the right was Miss Pollard's room. And she was the first grade teacher. And it was 1A and 1B, and then 2A and 2B all the way through school. And till you got into the upper grades, and then it didn't. It was, I don't know where the students all went to. they were all there. But Miss Ritchie was the principal. And I do not remember her coming down the steps to come, even walk in the halls. I only remember her in all those years that I was there. I do not remember her except coming out on the landing by her steps. And her office actually was over top of those steps, you know, when you came in the front door. Across from there, up on a landing where the steps went up, the big wide steps went up to the second floor, was a statue of Washington on horseback. And there was the plaster type of, and I don't know, really, I imagine it was some type of plaster, but I don't know, I wondered where that statue ever went to after McKinley School was torn down. But the floors were always, always spotless and so shiny. And they were, I understand they were maple. And I wish I had a piece of that wood, and you know how that is. But Miss Pollock had the first grade, and I can remember that she had the benches on three sides that we would go up there and stand in front of, and sit in front of her and to read our Dick and Jane books, which is what we had then. And then she sat in her chair, which made the fourth side of the area. And along the back of the room was a long cloak room, had no doors to it. And there was hooks on both sides, and there was a shelf. And then our chairs had drawers underneath that you could pull out, and you could keep your supplies there, and that kind of tablet-like chairs like so many of them are now. But and then from Miss, and so we did learn to read in Miss Pollock's room. Then the next room down the hall was Miss Leahy, and she had the second grade. And then next was in the 2A was Miss Lucille Carpenter. And Miss Carpenter's father was a Dr. Carpenter, and there was Isaac Carp. Oh, I said the wrong thing. Anyway, it was a carpenter fund that if the children couldn't afford glasses anywhere in the school district, that they would buy glasses for the children. And I can remember one thing that I'm just rattling on. Miss Carpenter, I can remember if you did something wrong. For instance, one day I whispered in class, and which you weren't supposed to do, of course. She did not punish you. She gave you the ruler, and you had to hit the palm of your hand so many times. And that was almost worse than the teacher had spanked you. But then when you came on down the hall was Miss Reba Griffin, and she was the other second grade teacher. Then is when you came to the stairway that led up to where that statue was. At the other, next to Miss Carpenter's, Clarence J. Carpenter. I wanted to get that name right. Clarence J. Carpenter. And there was a stairway where you went up to the second store. That was right next to Miss Carpenter's room down there. Or this, and the other half of it went down to the basement. But there was a bust of Lincoln on that landing. And then as you went on, like I say, as you went on down across the steps, then on the right hand was Miss Reed's class. Now she taught third grade, but she also mostly taught art. And the cloakroom at the back of her room, all that whole shelf was loaded with all kinds of jars of paint. And I, And it was just jar after jar of paint. And we had tables in there instead of having any chairs. And then her room took up just, evidently it was a deep room. And then when you got down to the other landing to go up to the second floor there, and I do not remember what the bust was there. But then it was that room was used mostly as a substitute teacher's room, or if we had something special that we kept there. On the other side, or straight across from that, we'll go back to the front door as you came in. If you turn to your left, the first room was Miss Bacon, and Miss Bacon was a third grade teacher, and she also taught science. And at the back of her room, she had a sand table. And, oh, that was interesting. Never did get to do anything that I can remember. But she also had magnets, and there was all this little fine grating of metal so that you could play with. Oh, that was a lot of fun to play with that. And then I remember that if it got real hot, of course, you had these great big tall windows, and the blinds, half of them went up and half of the blind came down. But I remember that if it got to 90-some degrees in the room, the school would be dismissed. And I can remember this one boy got a rag and put it in, got hot water on it, held it on the thermostat, didn't work. Of course, she saw what he was doing. When you came down farther, then going on west, on the south side of the building, there was Miss Webster's class, and she taught third grade. Then you could go down a little farther and went down steps, and there was an annex there, and that was the gymnasium. There was a long hallway between the building. I'm sure it was never told, but I'm sure the building, the annex or the gymnasium, was put up after the main building was built. And it had, instead of being the square windows like we talked about, it had the arch across the top. And there was this stage, and they had spring plays every year. And they were big productions, had costumes and all, and the mothers, worked on the costumes, and it always had programs in at Christmas time, and too. And Miss Muir was the second gym teacher. The first gym teacher we had was Miss Zimmerman, Miss Vernon Zimmerman. And then, but the at the back of the north part of the gym was the long office. So it actually was the nurse's office, and Tommy Heineman was the nurse there at that time. And also in her office, there was a shower. That some of the children, at that time, there were children that came to McKinley School that lived on the dump. That's what we were told. Whether they did or not, I don't know. But they lived anyway. They were bused into school.
I'll stop you just a second. The dump, is that what you called it?
What's that?
What did you call it that they lived on?
They lived on the dump.
What was that?
Well, it was evidently where there was, I don't know if that was the beginning of recycle or what, but it was, it was where trash and stuff was taken. Because there was a shower there, and a lot of the mothers, and my mother and a lot of the other mothers too, whether they had boys or girls, both, if they had clothes, they would donate them to the school. And the children that came to school could go in there and take a shower and wash their hair at the nurse's office. And then they could have the clothes then. They didn't have to bring them back. They could have them and take them home. Then when we got upstairs, if we go clear to the east of the building, it was what the substitute was called auditorium, didn't call it English or anything else. It was called auditorium. And Miss Agnes Coffey was the teacher for that. And it was ran the full length from the front to the back of the building. And there was a stage with curtains, and we put on plays in her room too. I also had spelling bees in there and other contests. And Miss Coffey was a very good friend of Agnes Clara Darby, who was an author from St. Joseph that lived there on Jewel Street, about 26th and Jewel. And her books are in the Library of Congress. So I got to meet her, which is another part of the story I'm going to tell you later. But next to the Miss Coffey's room was a long, the It was a closet, but it was as long as the classroom was to the south, and it was full of costumes, just both two long rows. And oh, it was more fun to have that door be open so you look in there and see all those costumes from all the different times. It was really exciting. But then as you came on down the hall to the west, on the south side of the hallway was Miss Laura Lucinger's. She was the fifth grade teacher. On the north side was Miss Ruth Beale, who was the music teacher. And one of the things that we made when we were in there, we made marimbas, a class. We sanded the wood and would go there early in the morning. And we must have stayed after school because that would took a lot of work. But we put on several programs. In fact, somewhere, you mean after all this, been a lot of years. Somewhere, I don't still have the marimba, no. But I still have the picture that was in the paper of all of us that had made the marimbas. Then we're back to the middle of the hall again, and we across there. And I don't know, I think the room over top of the principal's office was supplies. But when you got on the other side of the big stairways coming upstairs, the first room on the north was Miss Slater's room, and she taught sixth grade. Let's see, no, she taught fifth grade, and because Miss Lucinger taught fifth grade also. On the south side was Mrs. Bowen, and you notice that's the first time I said Mrs. At that time, you could not be married and teach school. Mrs. Bowen was a widow, and so she was able to teach school. And so she taught fourth grade. So, and then going down farther, then there was a teacher's lounge there. And that was comparable to the long closet that held all the costumes. And then was one of my favorite rooms too, was Miss Norton had the library. And oh, I thought they had so many books. I probably have more books here in my family room than what there were. Two of the books that I do remember was the book about Queen Elizabeth, which was the Princess Elizabeth and Princess Anne. I remember that book. And then the other was the Little House on the Prairie books by Laura Ingalls Wilder. Later in life, Bob took me to her home in Mansfield, Missouri, and saw some of the other places where she lived also. My husband spoiled me, which I didn't really appreciate as much as I do now. But but Miss Norton was very good. You know, she really instilled love of reading. And all of my teachers really instilled the love of reading. And I still enjoy it today. But then Grace Whitney was the seventh grade teacher then. And she was in the northwest corner of the building. And I remember one time we were reading the Birds' Christmas Carol. And it's very easy for me to cry, but I got to the last part of it where the little girl is very, very ill. So I got crying so hard, Miss Whitney said, "You go ahead and sit down if you want to, Betty, and I'll have someone else face the story." Then two other people that were very, very important to the school was Mr. Pepper. He was our custodian. And as I said, those floors were just shining all the time. And then Mr. Allison was our engineer. And just such fine gentlemen. And if you notice, I didn't mention any about restrooms. The restrooms were all in the basement. One great big one for girls and another one for boys. And then Mrs. Allison, then our cook was Miss Walmsley. And she was a very good cook, but you know, few of us stayed for lunch because we had an hour for lunch, and our mothers were home, so many of us went home for lunch. I don't know if they had free lunch then. I have no idea. But one of the things that Miss Walmsley made was so good. She made salmon croquettes, and they were every one of them was in a perfect cone shape. And whenever she served salmon croquettes, she always had breaded tomatoes, and she had buttered peas and carrots, and her wonderful hot rolls. And I was so lucky if Mother let me stay on the days that we knew that Miss Walmsley was going to have that. Also, I can remember at times that we also had taffy pulls. There was a company would come to the school, and You would, for 10 cents, you could buy a long stick of and it was flat, of taffy. And I don't think any of it ever got pulled to make into candy, because I think it was so good and buttery. We just chewed on it just the way it was. But before I left McKinley School, we had a new principal. I have no idea what happened. Whether Miss Ritchie was just old enough that she retired, but Miss Ruby Moore was the principal that came in and as the principal there at McKinley. And the interesting thing was that after I grew up and we already had our home here on King Hill Avenue, and I had my daughter, Miss Moore called me one day, and you know, you always think, oh, wonder what my daughter did. And but she said, Betty, I'm going to have a secretary. Do you know of anyone that would be interested? And so I gave her the name of two different people that I knew that had been secretaries, different places, you know, in their work business. And I said, no, I said, those two. And she said, well, why don't you come over and talk to me about this? I'd like to know a little bit more. So I went over, and Miss Moore had always planned things out very, very precisely. And she knew before she ever called me over there that she wanted me to come over. And I wasn't really a secretary. I was more or less a greeter, I guess. And so I started to work over there. Then in the office, Miss Moore was having trouble with her eyesight, very, very severe. And so I came over there as the secretary, and I was over there for 11 years then, and enjoyed it very much. I was on the school board, and after that, I taught school too, and I taught enough years that I could retire. I was a paraprofessional. I was not which is different. That's a teacher's aide. So, was that about enough?
Well, at that time, I've allotted about 3 hours. So you can talk. You don't have to talk 3 hours, but you certainly can talk for 3 hours if you want to. I don't want to hurt you. I'm fascinated by all of this. So how did things change? How did things seem differently from the time you were in school to when you went back as Mrs. Moore's secretary?
I always knew she was pretty strict, but my parents were very, very, they were very kind and very loving, but yet everything that she did was very regimented. It was, and I did not realize that. You mean I just took it for granted when I went to school. Whatever the teacher said, that's what it was. And so I think I noticed that more at that time. But yeah, it was very different. And of course, then over at Hosey, then is where she was principal, and which is, you know, just right over here, very close to where we live. And when the children were walking down the hall, the tile on the floor there was tan and brown, typical. And when you walked down the hall, you stayed on the brown blocks. On either side, you didn't, and you know, as even as an adult, if you're going down the hall, you still felt like you saw to stand those brown blocks. But, and being the secretary, and this was typical that we, and now they have secretaries at all the schools, and all the elementary. But like I say, I was the first one that was hired then for the elementary schools, which I'm proud of to say that I was. And whenever the children would get hurt, and my desk was in with the nurse's desk, Miss Helen Nelson, and so as I naturally, when the children get hurt, where's the nurse? She's going from that school to the next school, because they have more than one school, you know. So I was the one usually in the first aid, because that was when they fell on the playground, and some of them broke their arm, or you learned that heads, if they get hurt, you know, get a cut in the head. Oh, a head bleeds like stuck hog. And I was the one that, and I'd learned a lot of things about taking care of, you know, with first aid, and I guess I should have had a first aid course, but I didn't. But many of the children to this day, when they see me here many years since, because I resigned from over there in 72, so it's been a long, long time. And so they'll say, oh, Miss Tolbert, you look just exactly the same. And I thought, oh my words, did I look that bad then? But yes, I did. They still think I'm the nurse. A lot of them do. And of course, they found out that I wasn't. But it was, or and then one time even, we had a teacher fall and break her arm. Miss Colton fell there over there at Hose Inn. And so I put the temporary restraint on her and, until the ambulance came to get her. But we had wonderful Christmas programs too. And that was another thing that we had at McKinley School that I forgot to tell you about. We had a spring program and we had a Christmas program. And they always saw to it. There was cost. All the children had costumes. You know, the parents that sewed would get together and they would make the costumes. And I mentioned that Ada Clara Darby was a good friend of Agnes Coffey. Well, this one program that I was in, Miss Coffey had invited her to come down to see the program. And while she was there, she and Miss Coffey introduced several of us to her. And so as a child, you know, you don't realize, you know that they're just a nice person and you like them and so on, but you just don't realize, you mean, how wonderful it was and what a privilege it was to get. So she invited me to her home for her cat's Christmas party. So I got to go to her, and Mother and Daddy didn't have a car, Grandpa did, so Grandpa took me out to Miss Coffey's, to Miss Darby's house then, and her sister lived with her. And she lived there on Jewel Street. I think it was 26th and Jewel, but it could have been 28th, you mean. That's been a long, long time ago. I had dark hair then. But, so we had it was like a little tea, and she just visited with us, and she was a charming woman, she really was. But when we put on the programs in the spring, Mr. Drowns had a peony farm there on East Lake Boulevard, which is right there in South St. Joseph, just where you really get into South St. Joseph. And as you would come on the bus south or streetcar, I can even remember the streetcars too, as you come down and you look over towards that, his backyard, I don't know how many acres it was. It was row after row of these beautiful peonies blooming. And when we have the plays in the spring, he would bring these huge bouquets of peonies and bridal wreath and put them along the front edge of the stage. And it made it so nice. So it was, and then his son, see, I'm telling you, his son, one of his sons, grew up and became a dermatologist in Kansas City, and he left a huge, more than $1 million to Benton High School to be used for scholarships. But the recipient could, for instance, I could go over there and apply for it today if I wanted to, and you had to live south of Lake Boulevard and west of 22nd Street to be able to use, because that was South St. Joseph. And so he wanted to help out the South St. Joseph. And they lived over in Florence Addition at that time. And that was elk and buffalo and you know, they were all named in animals. And there was a bank over there and so on. I don't remember ever being over there, but that was part of the community. But and so then Drown's family then later were able to move up on, accumulated enough that they could move over on East Lake Boulevard. So it was something interesting.
Now, when you say that they accumulated enough to move to East Lake Boulevard, was there a...
Well, they didn't want to live down in Florence Addition down there. In that. See, that was down along on what now is Lake Avenue.
Okay, so there was down kind there. Of a...
Not Lake Avenue, over along the Stockbridge route, that's 7... I don't know what it is now, but I think it's 59 Highway.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So there was kind of a social difference?
Well, it was just, you know, I mean, that's just like... You mean some used to be Noyes Boulevard, now it was Stony Crest, now it's Lake, you know, how it progresses. Okay.
So can you tell me, I mean, we'll get back into some other stuff later, but can you kind of tell me about, like you were telling me before, about where South St. Joseph really starts and the difference between being called a South Sider and a South Ender?
Oh, and I think... I know I have a friend that worries. She said, why do they say the South End and the East End and the North End? And I said, well, that's just the same as any other community. If you go to Kansas City, there's all different areas down there too, you know, most of them have names rather than saying that it's North Kansas City. Well, although there is a North Kansas City, and they have a lot of different, there's Gladstone and so on. Yes, and of course there's been rivalry in the schools, and of course there was used to be rivalry between all three of the public schools, the public high schools, but Central has grown large enough that it for its sports and so on that they're in a different classification, and so they can't as far as for competition they can't play against the two local high schools.
So where does the south part of St. Joseph officially start?
They're at Lake Boulevard. They're on the south side of the viaduct. In other words, it's south of Atchison. You know where Atchison is there at the Light and Power Company. It's south of there because you haven't gotten to the viaduct yet.
And you were telling me a little bit that it used to have a different name.
Georgetown.
Georgetown. And what do you know? Do you know why it was called that?
I have no idea. Oh. No, I don't have any idea. But I think it grew up around the packing house, really. Because there was, of course, you don't even know that. There was Swifts and Armors. And now, Dugdale was over on 11th Street. But see, that wasn't south of that wasn't really in South End. It was close to it, but it wasn't. Dugdale was there right across from where Quaker Oats was, with Lifeline Foods now. But, and that was, Bob and I had a membership in what they called Guaranteed Foods was the name of the program. And we got our foods through for them. And you would call in your order and they'd bring it and they'd put the stuff in the freezer and they put the food on the canned stuff and so on the shelves and put it all away for you. And the one gentleman that came said, the meat that the Guaranteed Foods had was all Dugdale's food meat too, and it was very, very good. And he said his uncle drove a refrigerated truck, and all of the meat that was served at the White House was Dugdale's meat. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
And that was back in early 70s, so I don't even know who. I don't remember now who the president was, but he said every bit of beef that was served was from Dugdale's. So, I think that that was what where St. Joseph really grew was from the people that were brought here, that came here because of the packing house, and then we have a number of very fine Mexican people that. Had been railroad workers. We had the Almanzas and we had the Mejias, and there's a whole group and very, very wonderful people, good neighbors, good people. Mm-hmm. But they've spread all over town too.
So, let's see. Did you what was high school like for you?
Oh, I enjoyed high school. I was not an athlete at all. And the interesting thing was that Ms. Zimmerman, who was our the gym teacher to begin with over at McKinley before Miss Muir had it, and she was the gym teacher that had been at that time when I got over to Benton then. The teachers that I had, although they were in McKinley, were all Miss, of course, as I told you, except for Mrs. Bowen. But as I look back now, I knew that some of them were going to school during the summertime, and I thought, isn't that nice that they're going to school in the summertime? But I found out that after you had so much, after you got out of high school, if you had so many hours of college, you could teach as long as you were working toward your degree. And so they would go every summer to add to their degree until they could get their degree, and that was And of course, as you looked at them, when you're a child, you look at them and you think they're all old. You think that you're there. People were either your age or else they were as old as your mother and your grandmother. They were, you mean, they were all the same age. And I think that's true even today. But your mind, and I know my mother-in-law was almost 90, and I turned 88 in January, and I thought, my golly, I didn't realize that Mom was as young at 88. Maybe she didn't seem as young, but she didn't seem that young to me. She had, of course, my mother was just 60 when she died very suddenly, but it does make a difference, you know. And of course, I didn't think about my mother being young at 60, and then when I got to be 60, I thought, golly, mother was sure was young. Uh-huh. Yeah, you just don't realize. But, I have a brother. I had a brother, and I have a sister. My sister and I are very, very close, but I lost my brother a little over 10 years ago. Leroy Maxwell was my brother. He was had been the juvenile officer here in St. Joseph, and I know when Bob's my daughter Betty Diane was going to school at Benton, and she said sometime when she walked down the hall, somebody stopped her and said, "Are you the one who's your uncle is the probation officer?" And she said, "Mother, are you telling those kids that?" And I said, "I don't have anything. I don't know any of those kids. I don't know who you're talking about." But yeah, she said they certainly spotted her right away. But then he later was professor at Missouri Western and taught criminal justice. So, but then my sister and I are very close. She's 12 years younger than I am. She's a wonderful, wonderful friend, too, and we do lots of things together.
So, what did you do after you got done with high school?
After I got through the high school? I went up to junior college, concrete campus as they called it, and was never going to get married. And then that summer after that first year, I met my Bob, and we had our first date the 24th of July, and he gave me the ring the 4th of September. We were married the 4th of November. So I don't believe in long engagements, obviously. But so then I kept. Every time I had a chance, I would go back to school and get another semester. Uh-huh. And so it was fun that way. And then I even, after I was on the school board, then I went back and got some more. Because to be a paraprofessional, you had to have so many hours before you can't just walk in off the street and become a paraprofessional. Mm-hmm. So it was fun.
You called the junior college the concrete
campus. Oh yeah, it's right there where, on 10th Street. You know where it is.
Near the library, right?
No. Huh?
Oh.
Oh yeah, near the library. I know what you said now. Yeah, near the library.
That used to be. So you went there.
Uh huh.
And what kind of classes did you take while you were there?
That's something else I can tell you. Forgot about that too. I was going to become a teacher. That's what I intended to do. And let's face it, when I got out of high school, there were very few jobs that were open to women at that time. It was nursing, teaching, or that was about it. Nursing and teaching, or of course homemaking. But so anyway, that's what I was going to become a teacher, and so I was sitting in Miss Robinson's class that one day. And Mr. Bishop, who had been one of the teachers over at Benton High School, came knocking at the door, and Miss Robinson went over to the door to see what he wanted. And so she turned around and she said, Miss Maxwell, Mr. Bishop would like to see you. And I thought, wonder what's in the world's the matter, you know? And the music teacher at Everett School had been in the hospital and wouldn't be back for most of the second semester, and they needed a music teacher, so they came over and asked I was to go over there in the afternoons after I got out of school and to teach music. And so that's what I did, and that was an interesting experience too. And I can remember one of the boys in there, of course this was, I graduated from high school in 46, and so one of the boys in there, his name was Moran, and of course the moron jokes were just thick then. And I thought, when I was reading the role, I thought, oh, what am I going to do? And I said, Now, this next name, I can't read all of it because it's smudged. And he said his first name is Bob. And I said, now, who's that? And it was Bob Moran, who became a teacher later over at Benton High School. And we've laughed about that many times, but I certainly was not going to pronounce that moron, because can you imagine? I would have lost that class completely. And that was when, that was up there at the top of the hill. It had formerly, Everett School formerly had been a Central High School up there on 14th, up there at the top of the hill. So, yeah, I've had some interesting experiences that have been fun.
So you would have been kind of growing up during World War II.
Yes, uh-huh. In fact, I was, I was in school when President Roosevelt died. And I can remember the day that he died. I can remember Mr. Daffron, who was a wonderful principal there at Benton High School, called our class. It was the juniors and seniors both into the auditorium. And he told us, you know, he announced to us that President Roosevelt had died. And we were in just a few days, then we would have our junior-senior prom. And so he said, Mr. Daffron was wonderful. He let us think for ourselves, you know. He said, what do you want to do? Do you sure you cancel it? What should you do? And I can remember when the young men stood up and he said, you know, President Roosevelt would not want the world to stop just because he died. We need to show our respect, but he would expect us to keep on going. And so he said, I think the thing for us to do is to go ahead and have the prom. And so we had the prom. So that was the type of principal that I had when I was at Benton High School. So, it was, I played the piano, and we had Mr. Lakin was the music teacher, and we had the dance band. Some of my teachers that I had at Benton High School went to the service, and while I was there at Benton, Mr. Lakin, in fact, was in the service, too. He was the band director, and, he later became the band director and head of music down at William Jewell College. And he wrote the William Jewell alumni, or the song, you know, the school song. So.
What kind of differences in life did you notice when the war started?
People were very patriotic. We saved the aluminum, the foil wrappers off of. You didn't have aluminum foil like we have now. You know, where you rolled out. You didn't have plastic bags like they have now. You had wax paper, but you didn't have sandwich bags. And it's amazing when you start looking back at the things that we have now, the conveniences we have that we certainly didn't have at that time. But and we saved, and then every Friday we would take our dimes so we could buy another stamp to put in our little book, so that after we got the books filled, we would earn a savings bond. So that was real, you know. They were $18, $18.50. I think it was $18.50, and of course they would accumulate, or left them long enough, they'd become $25, and we did that.
Was that like a rationing book?
No, we had rationing books. Yeah, the rationing books. That was the parents took care of that, because you got your butter, your sugar, your meat. You mean there are a lot of things that you got with the rationing books. In fact, I still have my daddy had kept those rationing books. I still have my rationing book that was used when the stamps are left in there, and your shoes, because leather products. There was a tax that was put on cosmetics. Uh-huh. You couldn't buy silk hose that was not available because they were using them for the parachutes, the nylon. And of course, the silk, and a lot of it was silk rather than nylon too. But you're making me think about stuff I hadn't thought about for a long time. Let's see. But and then I also remember that I've never smoked. Well, once when I was just a little girl and I next door, our mothers were having some kind of get together, and there, and we were right next door, and we decided we were going to try smoking because her mother smoked, and so Connie got a couple of Hazel cigarettes. We tried, we never even get them lit, let alone smoke. So, but anyway, Phillips cigarettes used to have a bright green package, and that's when they changed, because, and the slogan was that Phillips green has gone to war. And evidently, the whatever they used in that pigment of green was what they were using on the other. I don't know if, and I don't know if it was the paint or if it was the uniforms or what it was. But yeah, the Philip Morris green has gone to war. So, no, but I had uncles that were in the service. My daddy was a night warden that got out and walked, you know, the neighborhood at night. And you did keep the, at certain times they would ask you to, you know, not burn your lights at night unless you had dark shades at the window. And I remember listening and at nighttime hearing the long flights of the airplanes flying over to, you know, when they were transporting planes to other places. Didn't realize a lot of those were women that were flying those planes, and some of them even from here in St. Joseph. And the Tuskegee a group that they were flying them to, so they probably flew right over our home there and didn't even realize it. But there was, and butter was rationed. Well, there was a lot of stuff that was rationed. And I remember that mother got a, everybody said that, you know, you could buy mutton, but it wasn't rationed. And so mother tried that once, and that was the first and only time she ever cooked. She even fixed the mint jelly to go with it, but we still wouldn't eat it. And I can remember Daddy, we used to say, well, you know, something new that Mother would have on the table, we'd say, well, you know, what is that? And he said, if it wasn't good, your mother wouldn't have put it on the table. So I was raised with a lot of sayings, too, like all dry signs fail in wet weather and no things like that. So, oh, dear. But I remember my little sister, of course, being 12 years younger, she was just like my toy. So she was a lot of fun. But then I was the organist up here at King Hill Methodist Church for a long time, and then later was choir director. In fact, I was choir director until the church closed. I said, I sometimes worry. Here, the McKinley School that I went to was torn down. The drugstore where I used to trade up there on the valley, up on the avenue, that's no longer there. I played the piano at the dancing school for 7 years, and that was the top two stories of the water company downtown, right across from the new convention of centers going to be. They took the top two stories off, so that's gone. I sure watch when I come down the street, but sure my house is still standing here. So lots of change, you know, things, more things have changed than you realize till you get talking, just like we're talking now. No, since I'm talking. But, you know, and then when I lived on Colorado Street, oh, I'd make at least two trips a week down to the Carnegie Library getting books. And I had some of my reading certificate that I got from down there. And when we had some kind of a meeting at the library when I was on the board, and so I took my reading certificates up there. Some of them had never seen the reading certificates, and some of the employees had never seen the reading certificates. And that was fun, and it was you could let your children go then. You didn't have to worry about them. Now, mother never did. I didn't belong to the Girl Scouts because they all met down at the Wesley House, and that was, mother thought that was too far for me to go to the Wesley House. I don't know why, because it was, Carnegie was a long ways from there too, you know, from home. But mother loved to read more than daddy read, but he was just always busy with, he was very, very, there were so many things that he could do, you mean, so it was just very, very, should have been an engineer of some kind, but his father died when he was just, wasn't 12 or 14, somewhere in there. So he had to quit school, and help support the family, so that happens. But his father was a welder for the railroad, and at that time was making terrific money because that the welders did, because it wasn't a job that was common at all. And he had imported pheasants and imported chickens and all that kind of, you know, and you don't do that on a farmer's or anybody else's salary, you know. But so it was a big change for them when Daddy's father died. But then you wonder how life would have been different maybe if that hadn't happened. And then when it's thinking about school too, Armistice Day at 11 o'clock, you always had a service in the gym, and then you went home for the rest of the day. Armistice was, and of course they call it Veterans Day now, but as you know. But anyway, it was very different than what it is now. But people were very proud of it, you know. But the poem that everybody learned, of course, is about the in Flanders Field. I think everybody knew that. So, and then you were, I think that when I went to to Benton from McKinley, it's a little scary going from a small school to a big school like Benton was. And three floors, you mean, and to think, and then you had to get that lock, and you couldn't be late for class. You had to get, and you get the darn combination lock unlocked, I'd never had a lock of any kind before, and of course the freshmen, their lockers all were on the top floor. You know, the seniors got to be on the first floor. So yeah, that was an excitement, and of course the classes were an hour. You had homeroom, first of all, and then I was, I played, I did some accompanying work for the music, for the vocal music. Francis Adams was the teacher there, and then, but I really had gotten into the orchestra, you know, playing the piano for the orchestra. So, that was a lot of fun, it really was. But I belonged to several different groups, you know, the Latin Club, and, you know, what do I remember Latin? Amo te, that's about anything that I learned. And I love you. But it does help you with a lot of things. And now the typing and the shorthand, I made good grades on it and passed. Didn't really like shorthand, but the typing, being as I played the piano, of course it was very easy, and I still can sit down to a typewriter. My fingers just automatically goes to the code after all these years. So I came out third in my class. It was just like 116, something like that, so that wasn't too great. But and everybody walked crying out loud. Nobody, the teachers hardly had cars. I can remember Miss Griffin over there at McKinley had a car, and I think Miss Beale had a car. But the teachers, you know, came together in the cars, and then over at Benton, then they're right behind the school where all the parking lot is now. There were any cars parked back there, because you couldn't buy a car during the Civil War. Did you know that? No, they couldn't make cars because they were making tanks and so on. And so, no, you couldn't buy a car. You couldn't buy gasoline. It was all rationed, too. But that was all the ROTC would practice back there, you know. Of course, that was pretty hard to keep your mind on your school lesson at that time when they were back there marching. So...
So how did you come to learn piano?
Well, Mrs. Brown was a music teacher, and she was a piano teacher, and she was right across the lived across the street from us there on East Colorado, and it was up in the 400 block. And I have no idea where the folks bought the piano. It was an upright piano. Later they bought me a baby grand, but my sister has the baby grand at her house because Bob's mother bought me the piano in there. Oh, and that's something interesting. Oral Andrews was the former owner of the piano that I had in the living room. When her furniture was all and her belongings were all auctioned off, Bob's mother bought that piano for me. And so Miss Andrews had been my teacher up at junior college, so I was real pleased to be able to get that piano too. And then there was a huge box of music, and a lot of it was signed by the people that some of them had written the music and some of them had just performed the music, and it was signed. And I really had no use for it, so I donated that to the St. Joseph Museum because, you know, as you know, she started the museum. And so that music, all that, and they came down here and got it. It was two of those, you know, the big wax boxes that had chicken in? There were two of those that was full of music. So I gave that all to them. And see, there might have been something in there that was worth a fortune that I gave away. But I figured they were the ones that should have it. So, she was a good teacher, but...
I think I only have really one more thing that we kind of talked about was Christmas at the Junction.
Oh, here at the Junction. Mm-hmm. There wasn't as much at the Junction. Of course, I guess because I wasn't down there as much. And now, they do have the Christmas program. They had the trio there at Christmas time. But now, that's been in the later years. That wasn't earlier. And, of course, down there at the Junction, at the Northwest, if you can kind of, it's where Lake Avenue and Illinois come together. At the Northwest corner, it was a tavern. So, you know, that's off limits. I can remember going to the Stockyards with Daddy when they, you know, when they had the 4-H show come in and the baby beef. That's not right name for it, though. Anyway, it was when the kids would come in and show their 4-H animals and so on. And then, of course, if the Longhorn cattle came in or if there was the Brahma with a big hump on their back, you know, Daddy would always take, we'd always walk down to see all of those. But, but then on the southwest corner was a filling station. And on the northwest corner, I really don't know what it was. On the northeast corner where the parking lot is now, that was a restaurant was in there. And at that time, they're on the southwest, on that, where the, let's see, what all is there? There's a beauty shop, and there's, up at the very end was Turner's Beatty grocery store, and then Bill Trotter had a shoe shop, and then Ward's had a beauty he had a shoe shop, and then Ward's had a beauty store, and the front was the barber, and in the back was the beauty shop. And then Harold, Putter's clothing store, and Mercantile is what they called as much as anything then. And then Harold Kohlbach then later bought it from them. And then Bradley had a drugstore. And that was about it. And then at the very end was then what Redstone Lumber Company then later, you know, later came down there. But and then there was a dentist down there also. And across the street in the brick building on the corner, right across from the Rialto Theater, which kids all call the rat hole. You go Sunday afternoon, you go to the show for a dime. And you didn't go just dressed even like I am. You wore your Sunday school clothes when you went to school, church, went to the show on Sunday afternoon. And my brother would always get walnuts, and he wanted to sit down close, and he'd always have a sick headache by the time he got out. And like I told my sister the other day, I can remember one outfit that I wore, and I said, this is crazy, but I said I had a blue. It was 6 scores in that skirt, and it was kind of a crepe-like. And then I had a brown kind of fingertip jacket that was double breasted. Isn't it strange what you remember? That's just like, I remember when it got home from church that Sunday when Pearl Harbor took place. And I remember that beautiful coat I had on that day with the fur collar and the fur cuffs. And it also was double breasted. I wonder why Con's mother talked me into double breasted. Anyway, they were double breasted down the front. It was a deep turquoise. It was pretty. But I don't know what else I had on. Sure, I had on shoes. But, that's strange. But yeah, but it was a, oh, and then on the right across from the Rialto was the hardware store. That was Scanlon's. And that was another place you could buy goodbye Christmas presents. You could buy wagons and things like that. So that was about as far as the business went. And then where Clark Sampson Funeral Home is, that was a boy I went to school with, and there were a few Jewish families who used to live down here in South St. Joe, but I don't know of any. But this Cohen was his last boy's last name, and he lived there right there in the home where Clark's funeral home is. And then in the back of the fire station, there was a hedge around the edge, and in the middle of that is now parking lot. Of course, everybody drives now, so they have to have a place to park. But they had a big fish pond, and Daddy would let us, you know, when we were kids coming from Colorado Street to come to walk in the church, he'd always let us walk in and see the fish. So that was fun, too. And then where they're tearing down, going to be the new Wesley House. It'll always be the Wesley House. I don't care what they call it. You know how that is. You don't change those names. It's like Squaw Creek. I don't care what the guy says. We'll still call it Squaw Creek. And I've never heard any of the Indians that objected in that either. But that was a Safeway grocery store was there. And across the street was Trading Post grocery store. And next to that was Orrin Miller's, not Orrin, Miller's car repair. Oh, and the Knicker Guinea was up in the next block and had the best Longhorn cheese you ever tasted. He had better Longhorn cheese. I think everybody from town, around town came there and got cheese from him. He had good cheese. And then there was a little ice house along there. It was, of course, it's a little empty lot now. But I can remember his dad sitting out there in front, you know, next to that, in the chair there next to the ice house. And I know he didn't sit there all the time, but that's the only way I remember him. Strange.
Can you tell about the ice house? Because there may be some people that listen to that.
Oh, it was just a little block house. It wasn't much bigger than, say, I doubt if it was even 8 foot square, and it just had this heavy door, you know, with this long handle, and you could go there and buy a block of ice. Uh-huh. Yeah, Grandma had an ice box, and I can remember, boy, you had to hurry up. You forgot about the pan underneath would get full and run over and run across the floor. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a wooden ice box. Now I remember when Mother and Daddy bought a refrigerator, and Uncle Tommy and Aunt Blondina came up from down to Atchison, and they saw that. Oh, Uncle Tommy just cussed. Why anybody ever buy anything like that? It wasn't a month till they had one. Dear. Golly. So, yeah, Grandma was a family of, there were nine of those children, Grandma Linder. She was the oldest. And then Grandpa Linder, there was about eight or nine in that bunch too. I have to stop and think. One girl, Aunt Berthy, and she was the only one of the whole bunch. Every one of those men had white hair, and I thought that I'd inherited my white hair because my hair's been white for many, many years, and I thought I'd inherit it from my grandpa, my mother's, because I don't remember my mother with anything but white hair too. And so then when we went to, Bob took me down to Kentucky to see about and see about when I was working on the DAR. And when we got there at Paducah and went to Morgan Funeral Home, oh, I don't remember names, but some of them I do and some of them I don't. But when he got there and I went in and I said, I am, you know, I'm looking for, searching about the Maxwell. We are searching about the Maxwell family. And she said, well, don't tell me which one of you is the Maxwell. Because she said, have you met Ellie Garrett Moore yet? And I said, no, we've talked with her on the phone, but we have not met her. She said, you are the Maxwell. I said, you're built just like her. You have the same white hair just like hers. And your features. And there was at least three generations difference between hers and the ones of the Maxwells that came here in the 1830s. And besides that, she was a cousin. She wasn't even direct. She wasn't a sister or anything like that. She was a cousin. And she said, you're the Maxwell, said, and just made the hair just stand on my arm. You know, it does, it, and so she said, the white hair. And so, see, it came from both sides of the family. I thought it was really strange. That was one of the most interesting things I found out, you know, about the Revolutionary Soldier. But, boy, you've taken me a long way.
Oh, that's okay.
It's been kind of fun.
Good, good.
Well, I've been in music contests. I've been in, I went back over Missouri, over junior college, crying out of bitties. I went back over to Benton, and they asked me to come back and do some company work, and I just volunteered. I didn't want any salary for it. I went back over there, and in fact, I later became a paraprofessional Hyde School after I went off the school board, because I've been on the school board and I've been on the library board, and professional volunteer. I'll do something that paid money, but I didn't. Anyway, I was over there, over at Hyde, and then after that, then the next year, for the next 6 years, then I was over at Benton. And so while I was there, then they asked me to come and accompany, and so I went up to Maryville for some of the music contests and accompanied the kids to singing and also instrumental both. And it took back a lot of memories, because when I was in high school as a student, I had gone to up there and to Maryville too and played for some of them. And then one, when there, this boy, I'm really sorry I can't remember this boy's name, but he played the saxophone. And I accompanied him, it was almost like we were just one person instead of being. And so when we went down to Columbia, he got a one up at Maryville, went to Columbia, and I sat down at that beautiful, beautiful Steinway piano. And he stood up there, and his mother was sitting there in the audience, and his teacher was there too. And so he played along so far, and it was just almost like I wasn't really playing like I was playing, but yet, It was the strangest feeling. I've never had that kind of feeling before or since. And I looked, and out of my peripheral vision, I could see this fellow that was a judge, and he just leaned back and folded his arms like that. And he said, when he got through, he said, you've made my day. He made a perfect score down there. The fellow didn't even write down anything. He said it was just that perfect. Listen to him play. So that was really quite a thrill. And it was strange. I don't know. I think that's something that happens once in a lifetime. So it really was. And I just wondered if that boy's still doing anything with his music. Well, he was good.
Neat.
Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun. So, well, I've enjoyed being with you this afternoon.
I've enjoyed talking with you.